few taping problems here, so I'm having to do my own tape recording here in the studio. If you want to call in to this show, it's easy to do. It's 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's who we are. If you want to call off air, talk to me, leave me a message on these and other issues, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Looks like we have a call here. Let's see what's up. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Robert?
Yes.
This is Roxanne.
Hey, Roxanne.
Hi. Robert, I wanted to ask you if you would cover, I had read about Kevin Freeman's death in Street Spirit when he was put in prison for a minor infraction and murdered there.
That's up in Berkeley, yeah.
Yeah, in Berkeley. I was wondering if some of the people that you have on who've been arrested can talk about, you know, if they've been in danger, you know, when they're in jail for chalking or blowing bubbles, what's happened to them. I really started being concerned about that aspect of it.
Well, I might, if Tom comes in today, I can ask him. I think that Tom is kind of reluctant to talk about his jail experiences, though he privately kind of mentioned to me that, you know, there were some interesting developments there, because he wants to focus the issue not on the jail or, you know, his personal treatment by the jailers, but on the issue of being jailed for simply engaging in an innocent and actually economically productive activity, juggling downtown.
Well, I wasn't exactly talking about his treatment as a prisoner. I was talking about the kind of inmates did he find himself just put in with dangerous, you know, people who are actually dangerous. I guess I never really realized the ramifications of what could happen, you know, and all you were doing was blowing bubbles.
Right. What if you're...
So I just wanted to tell you as a listener, I'm kind of interested in hearing, you know, what people have had to endure besides just their hours in jail.
No, I think that's a very good question. I mean, I've been in jail numerous times in Santa Cruz County Jail, not recently. I think the last time I was jailed was when I was arrested for raising my arm and you're acting like a bunch of fascists salute at city council at a year and a quarter.
And how long did you spend then?
I spent about 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours, something like that. And usually what they do is that they book you into the holding tank. Now, Tom Noddy, I think, got put in solitary, but...
he was juggling after all.
Well, yeah, juggling is a more serious crime. You know, you get to see the people who are picked up for drunk driving, and I mean, everybody's kind of thrown into the same tank. The so-called dangerous people, and I was actually in jail for up in San Francisco for a month for serving free food and held in the... I was in the minimum security pod, but there were a couple murderers in there and numerous... I'd say a third of the group was there for, you know, violent offenses, maybe. Again, it's hard to tell. I didn't really do a poll. I mean, I went out there, and we organized them anyway. We got them to sign petitions to open up the law library and treat people with AIDS, HIV positive, better. But there's, you know, there are points of friction. It's, you know, jail is a hothouse and a... Not a hothouse. It's a sort of a, you know, you're under a lot of tension there. Things can happen. There are power structures. And I'm talking jail. I'm not talking prison, where I've never been to prison. That's a different story. But yeah, it's something I guess I'll ask people about, because I hear that you, and I imagine others too, want to know about it. Also, I think that I got a call last night, which I'm going to pass on to you, Roxanne. I know you've been working on the issue of CPS, Child Protective Services, abuses and problems. And also just general government, where people don't get the services they need or want. You're an advocacy service. There's a guy called in who's got a child problem, and he's going to, I guess I'll refer him to you.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So if anyone has wants to call in on that issue, you've been to jail, how are people treated in the Santa Cruz County Jail in terms of safety? Roxanne was referring to a man who was killed in Berkeley. It was in April or May. I knew him, actually, not very well. I mean, we chatted sort of very briefly in the course of the last 10 or 20 years on the streets in Berkeley. He, sort of a long, thin-faced fellow, And seemed pretty harmless to me. And indeed, he was murdered in jail for some stupid reason. A number of stories were done in Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper you can sometimes buy from people on the streets in Santa Cruz. If you want to follow that story, you can also go to the library. Street Spirit is in the library, the main library branch, and it's available, and back issues are also available, and it would be a back issue by this point. I also encourage you to look in the library for the Street Shit Sheet, which is the homeless newspaper that I wrote for a number of years and still very, very occasionally write. I usually put out flyers instead. You can get that in the reference section of the Santa Cruz Library, main branch downtown, before, of course, they fire all the employees and close them up in order to support the police department budget. That's the police department budget, the same budget that has cops going into the library to stop people like Yon Golder from using the library because city manager Dick Wilson doesn't like him being there and has ordered an injunction against him. That's the whole story we talked about on Free Radio in the past, and actually that part of the injunction has been lifted. Yon can now go to the library, but he's not able to go to city offices, and he's only able to ask 5 questions per month, even by written material. He can't call, and he has been severely punished for his investigations. So, and he's been in jail. He was in jail for 37 days. Maybe we can get him to comment on the population in there. Let's hear some stuff from last night on the streets. And we're also going to be, thanks to the magic of producer Becky Johnson, listening to some budget material. The last city council meeting on July 22nd, the city council, I guess they kind of passed a budget, although some of the items are coming back in September. They're going out to committee and coming back. Or they made some tentative decisions. I'm not actually entirely clear exactly what decisions they made. If anybody has a clearer idea, maybe you can give a call to 427-3772 here on Free Radio. But Becky recorded the whole thing, and she's made some selections from the public commentary, which was very restricted. There were many, many, many items on the budget, and you could only speak for 3 minutes on all of them as one lump. Now, it's true that if you came down to the earlier hearings, you might have had some input there. They were, I guess, the previous Monday and Tuesday. But in the actual final decisions, you were allowed only very brief comments on everything, and you had to get it all in at once. The city council is having secret committee meetings on the budget. Apparently two secret committee meetings are meeting. One involving Kennedy and 2 council members, the other involving 3 other council members. Riley, according to Becky Johnson, is not involved, the mayor. But these are meetings which I tried to find the location and time of by calling Martine Bernal. And he told me that he didn't have to tell me that they weren't open to the public, that all this would come back to city council, and I should be, you know, happy to go there and check it out. Well, he didn't say I should be happy, but he agreed to let me know, to call me back to confirm that he wouldn't tell me when these meetings were. And I want to point out these are subcommittee meetings. And the city council has been doing a lot of this shifty shit, if, as I put it, by holding subcommittee meetings where they are, they have 3 council members. They're talking about city business. They're doing the hard, serious decision-making, triaging work that really results in the final bills, because most of the bill making, as you probably know if you follow Congress and the State Assembly and the State Senate and so forth, happens in committees. It doesn't happen on the floor of the House or the floor of the Assembly or the floor of the Senate or on the floor of the City Council in the city. It happens in the committee system. And when they cut the public out of the committees, they essentially cut the public out of the meaningful part of the process. And that's what they're doing. And I believe they're doing so illegally. They are claiming that because the Brown Act, which is the Open Government Act, doesn't require them to give 72-hour notice and doesn't require them to provide public comment periods and so forth, that they can then hold these meetings completely secretly without any kind of public being allowed at all. But my understanding from talking to journalists in the past and from prior city council experiences is if city council members are meeting on city council business, and they're doing so in a fashion that is a committee meeting of any kind, even not a standing committee, even ad hoc committees, even if they go to lunch to talk about something, 2 or 3 members, not even a quorum, if they're doing so in an official kind of capacity, they can't exclude the public. They don't have to necessarily go out of their way to provide comment periods for the public. They can require the public to keep quiet during those meetings and not provide a public comment period, as I said, but they don't. They cannot exclude them. And that's exactly what Mayor Riley's council under Dick Wilson, the city manager, who is really the power in this city, is doing. And that's another interesting thing that's happened. If you look at today's Sentinel, I actually bought it today because I saw Christopher Crone has written an article, an editorial in the Insight section, which goes further than the Good Times article he wrote, I guess, a week or two ago, in which he sort of talks about the need generally for an elective city manager because they are so powerful. This one criticizes Dick Wilson and the budget. And for once, I'm going to have to start giving Crone some real credit, albeit 4 years late. You know, he's only getting to it after he left office. It would have been much more powerful, of course, if he'd had the courage, or perhaps if he'd been ready to do it when he was in office. But the fact of the matter is, the fact that he's doing it now is a positive thing. I'm going to be reading that story later. I don't think you can get it online if you have the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Unfortunately, first of all, the Sunday Sentinel doesn't get online until later, and only parts of the Sentinel get online. And I don't think this story is, this editorial is there, but I'm going to be reading that. But now, lest we talk too much about the rarefied, inaccessible confines of the city council chambers, let's turn to the streets. Last night,
okay, well, it's about 10 to 11 down here on Pacific Avenue, Saturday night, July 26, 2003. We're talking with Eric Wardle.
Problems, obviously, with the recording. It was playing fine a few minutes ago. Maybe it's just this particular tape deck. Let me try another tape deck and see how we're doing. Hang on.
And Eric, we're here in front of Borders, and you say, was it last night or the night before when Dion brought down this chair?
Yesterday afternoon, actually.
What kind of a chair was it?
It's just like a real spinning chair with a reclining action. Like, not like a full-on lazy boy, but one he could put on his head and carry down.
And what happened?
Well, he was sitting on it, and Pam, the...
Bechtel, the CSO?
Yeah, she came down and said that he couldn't have the chair on the avenue, he had to take it away, and he kind of resisted, and she said, well, I'm going to call my superior, and then she walked away, and so he gave it to Def Jam, and then she came back and continued to hassle Dion, and he said, well, it's not my chair, and she said, well, it doesn't matter, I'm going to call my superior officer, see what he thinks, and blah, 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 and if you don't have it out of here in 5 minutes, then I'm calling the police or whatever. And then, well, she left and he took it away.
How long had he had it here?
Maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Had other police officers been by and noticed it?
I didn't see any other officers come by.
About what time was this?
Probably about 2 to 3 o'clock.
Well, because it's legal to have a chair as part of a display device, there's no real crime there that I'm aware of. But Bechtel apparently didn't suit her sense of what is appropriate, and so she was looking for an ordinance. But did she cite a specific ordinance?
No, we actually asked her for an ordinance number or name or whatever, and she didn't have any evidence of it. She said she didn't know which one it was.
No, but she knew she was going to find a way to give a ticket somehow.
Yeah, and she would have done it, I think, but...
So Dion then hauled that chair all the way back to his mom's house?
Yeah, apparently, or wherever it came from.
Across the river and through the woods, I guess. Thanks. Anything else happening down here?
Not really. It's been pretty chill since the near riot and police high-speed pursuit through Pacific Avenue.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, that was pretty crazy. They basically chased the guy around town for a while, and he stopped for like 10 minutes right here in front of Borders, and everybody stood around and yelled at him, and the police told everybody to back up because he had a gun. And
did he have a gun?
I'm not sure. I didn't see a gun, but he
seemed hostile.
No, I didn't see any hostility. He seemed more scared and nervous sitting in there.
And what, just parked? He double parked on the street here in front of Borders?
Yeah. And then they chased. Then he took off again, and they chased him around, and came back by with all flat tires, and chased him up there to the corner by the crawfish statue sculpture, and that's where they hung out for like probably close to 2 hours, maybe. And everybody was pushed back, and then
how many police officers were involved in it?
Oh my God, I don't even know. Probably like everyone in Santa Cruz, except for six.
Was he actually? So you never saw a weapon?
No, I never saw a weapon. I thought at one point that he shot his own window out on the driver's side, but then heard later that it was a beanbag or a foam gun of some sort. That
from him or from the police?
From the police, I think.
Well, I know that they reportedly put a dog in the car with him or something.
Yeah, I was kind of too far away to see. Like, I didn't really. All I saw was that window break out, another officer approach the vehicle and run away again, and then I heard something else smash, and then the dog barking and two other loud bangs that I thought were guns going off, but was told that they weren't and whatnot. But actually Dion, who was standing there watching on the other side, but he said that they put the dog in the car to chew on him for a little while, and then pulled him out and surrounded him and let him chew on him some more, and I guess an officer got bitten or something. And
the officer got bitten?
That's what somebody told me. Yeah. And then they brought the ambulance up, and it was over.
And how long did this whole process take?
Probably about, over the whole period, probably 3 hours.
Were you here throughout that process?
Yeah, I was. I saw the first car go by and turn down that street right there. And then it,
Walnut Street.
Yeah, and then it came back around, and then that guy John got arrested. Did you hear about that?
Say that again?
You know the guy John that sits up there in Spanges and said, has a little sign that says pigs suck, or pigs fucking suck or something?
Fuck the pigs at one point he had that sign.
Yeah, that guy. He was up there and we were all talking, and it was me and him and at the front of the line of people watching, and the police were trying to push us back, and he was...
Here O'Neill's or here at Borders?
That was up there, right...
Near the Cinema 9?
Yeah, right across the street from there.
O'Neill's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. O'Neill's, yeah. And he got... Let's see, what happened? He was talking about something... And we were kind of, you know, just standing there, like, everybody was all excited about the whole thing. And we were kind of up forward more, and they pushed us back, you know, and we moved back to where everybody else was. And then one of the women officers came up and said, "You're being too loud. You're the only one that we can hear." And he said, "No, I'm not." And she grabbed his wrist, twisted it, and took him off his bike.
This is John Moore?
Yeah. And took him off his bike and kind of like pushed him up against the planter and basically arrested him, but and put him in the car, and then he got out like probably an hour and a half later.
Did you say what he was arrested for?
Well, he said he technically wasn't arrested, just put in the car, and they gave him some piece of paper that I never got a chance to read.
You know the name of the officer who did this?
I'm not sure of her name.
Was she light blue or dark blue?
Dark blue. Yeah.
Was she down here regularly, or have you the first time you'd seen her?
No, I've seen her around.
Tall or short?
She's somewhat taller. Kind of pretty. Wendy?
Wendy Bynes?
I think it's Wendy.
Wendy is fairly tall, and I think Wendy has a lighter colored hair, doesn't she? Although I'm not very good at physical descriptions myself.
Yeah, I'm not either, really.
So, was John doing anything that you felt merited an arrest?
No, not whatsoever. I kind of put in my 2 cents and said, "You can't arrest him, this is ridiculous." And They told me to shut up and move back. And
how many police officers arrested him?
There's two there on him. It was her and another. I don't know if he was. He looked like almost like a rent-a-cop or something. But I think he was a regular police officer. Now I think about it. I'm pretty sure he was.
Happy birthday is about to be sung.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
I'm not quite sure who we're singing to, but happy birthday to an elderly woman on the street. Looks like a possibly a resident or maybe a poor tourist. So what was the ostensible reason, Eric, that John Moore was arrested?
Simply that maybe he was trying to rile the crowd, which wasn't at all what was going on.
What was he saying?
Anything that I don't even remember what was said. He didn't say anything really. We were just kind of yelling, like excited, you know, and like.
You were near the car?
Oh, we were actually probably like 25, 30 yards away from the car.
How many people in the crowd were watching?
Oh, there's probably like a couple hundred around the whole thing.
Was anyone else arrested that you were aware of?
No. That was it.
We've been talking with
Eric Wardle.
And Eric, you're going to court on what date?
September 16th.
And your crime is?
Lying on a sidewalk and leaning my bike against a tree.
And actually, because I was actually present when I saw both these supposed incidents. One, you were actually lying on your backpack, which was on the sidewalk, leaning on your backpack. And you had your bike sort of lingering over this planter behind the Borders, the bench in front of Borders, one that's down toward Costa Brava, but not that far down. Eric, thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Keep up the good work.
What are you going to do with this?
Tomorrow on the radio, we're going to hopefully hear you. We're talking with a man with a guitar. You've done some musicianing on the mall and had a lot of time kind of observing here.
That's true. I've been playing guitar down here for about 2 years.
And your impression is that you think there's been a substantial improvement on the mall in terms of, problems at some... Well, were there problems a year ago that you felt needed to be addressed on the mall?
I think over the period of the last 2 years up until about 6 months ago that there were several problems down here, and I think that most of them have been resolved, but with that said, based on the history of this area, that may in fact cause people to cause more trouble down here.
What do you mean by that? I mean, by resolved, do you mean that the police have moved along people, or do you mean that people have gone underground, or I'm not quite sure. What do you mean?
Personally, I believe that the police have done a good job down here. I've seen them handle a lot of different situations, and I think they've handled most of them appropriately. I think the problem with the downtown area in relation to the last 2 years is that there were a lot of undesirable people down here causing problems for everybody. I think the police reacted in most cases appropriately to that. I do believe that the way that the laws were written down here in regards to the street musicians was very poorly written. I believe it puts the musicians in a bad position. It puts law enforcement in a bad position, and a lot of people get stuck in the middle. In relation to your issues and your free speech down here, I support you 100% in your right to express your opinions, as long as those opinions aren't expressed in a way that are disruptive to the community or incite violence in the community.
Well, you were actually a witness to a violent incident when I was tabling at the New Leaf Market area before that fence went in at what was then Sushi Now and Alibaba's kiosk area. Well, it actually wasn't. It was a public area where people could sit down. It's now a, sort of an enclosed area and a fenced-in area that is shared by Alfresco's and Cafe Campesino, the successor businesses to Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe. But I was doing some tabling, and at one point, you observed a potential incident of violence. Do you remember that?
That's past history at this point. I don't really see a point in bringing that up right now.
Well, I want to bring it up as an example of the fact that you yourself haven't, you personally intervened to stop a violent activity.
That's true that I did, but again, that's a long time ago. That individual...
A year and a half ago, yeah.
That individual's been taken care of. I don't think it's something to really even bring up at this point.
Well, I think it was rather a heroic activity on your part. That's why I'm bringing it up, but I want you to get credit for it. In fact, and I want people to be aware that there are people on the streets, and not just police officers, who are concerned about keeping the peace downtown. That's what you were trying to do, I believe.
Actually, what I was trying to do was defend your right to free speech. The individual that was down here kicked your table over, threatened your life, and I felt that you weren't doing anything wrong in expressing your opinions and exercising your right to free speech. So what I did was just defend that.
And you took a serious punch on the face for that.
I took a headbutt on the face, actually. That's true. Actually, I got sucker punched is what happened to me.
And I know that the guy was, it's interesting, the guy was released the next day. I was the victim, and so were you, and neither of us were even informed of the situation, but it all worked out pretty well. I mean, he came back, and he was no stay-away order for him, strangely enough, although I wouldn't even necessarily have asked for it, but he didn't cause any further trouble. I thought it was just, he had a bad angry moment. I think he blew up. And
Let me comment on that. The actual situation was the individual was intoxicated. He had some personal problems that he was dealing with and had nothing to do with me, had nothing to do with you. I intervened in a situation and his friend blocked my view and quickly moved out of view, and I was sucker headbutted. I talked to the individual afterwards. He and I got along fine. That's not an issue, and I just... There's not really any reason to bring it up at this point.
It was all resolved.
I wouldn't say it was resolved, but it's just not an issue anymore. Right. And it's not an issue in relation to what's going on the street currently.
Well, what is going on the street currently in your view? I mean, you mentioned that you think the laws are a little onerous for the street musicians. What do you mean by that?
Well, I just think that the laws as they were written weren't properly researched in regards to who was causing the problem down here and why they were causing problems down here. In other words, the musicians, a very small percentage of people that come here to play music have ever caused any problems down here. To address any laws towards the street musicians or enforce laws against the street musicians doesn't help the issues down here, which were essentially panhandlers that were being overly aggressive, people that were being disrespectful to visitors and residents and elderly people and kids and women, people who were intoxicated and looking for trouble and looking to cause trouble. Those issues had nothing to do with the street musicians performing down here. The street musicians in Santa Cruz that perform down here are an asset to the community. They are an asset to the merchants down here. There are many people who I've talked to who come down here on the weekends, especially tourists, who are spending money in the stores along Pacific Avenue that specifically come down here for the street scene. A lot of that has to do with the street musicians, but some of it just has to do with the general characters that hang out on the street down here. And so again, the musicians were penalized because they were an easy target, because they are stationary when they perform, and it's real easy to identify them and enforce laws against them, but they were the wrong people to target to begin with. Most of the musicians down here, 95% of them, 98% of them, are just down here to practice their art, perform and make a little bit of money on the side. They're not looking for fights. They're not looking for trouble. They're not panhandlers. They're performers. And I would add to that, there's a lot of other people I understand that have come down here, and this is an area of the law that I'm not 100% familiar with, but jugglers, for example, that have come down here and been cited. It's a ridiculous thing that the street performers, any type of street performer, is providing a service to the community as long as they're not being disruptive on the sidewalk. And I'd even take that to the point of hacky sack, as long as the hacky sack players aren't jumping around and running into people or knocking people over. There have been some people down here doing different things with juggling or hacky sacks that just aren't careful about what they're doing, and those people tend to ruin it for everybody else. But those are isolated cases.
Now, the Heinrichs of Pacific Trading Company,
evening,
thank you. The Heinrichs of the Pacific Trading Company were concerned about musicians outside playing on the Walnut Avenue planter, you know, the planter area that used to be there before they moved the railing of the fence out 4 inches. And they were able to persuade the city to spend $6,600 of police department money to move that railing. I'm wondering, any reaction to that? What's your feeling about that?
One, I would question if that individual store owner actually convinced whatever entity is responsible for the budget to build the railing. There's a couple issues there for me. One is the expenditure to move that railing to me was ridiculous. That money could have been used elsewhere in the city for a lot better purposes than just moving the railing. I don't believe that moving that railing really accomplished very much. However, I would say that there were a lot of people a year ago that were sitting on that planter, that were throwing their trash wherever they felt like it, that were spitting on people as they walked by, that were very disrespectful. And quite frankly, if I own Costa Brava, which is the restaurant next to Pacific Trading Company, or I own Pacific Trading Company, I wouldn't want those kind of people sitting out in front of my establishment either. As far as the street musicians are concerned, I think that's a merchant's prerogative. If a merchant feels that a musician is being disruptive to their business, they certainly have a right to ask the musician to move. So I don't really have any problem with that.
No problem with them moving the railing? Well, the expense, but let me put it this way. If they'd agreed to move the railing at their own expense, the problem a lot of us have, of course, is that it's public property that's being, you know, eliminated, public seating space.
Personally, I don't believe that moving the railing accomplished very much, and your point's well taken. There's very little available seating downtown as it is. That happens to be a place where there's a shaded area, and it's a nice place for people to sit, not just for some of the homeless people down here, but also the tourists as well. Again, the problem was that people were abusing the privileges sitting there. My issue with the railing is the expense of it, and the money, if it is in fact $6,000, that money could have been used elsewhere a lot more effectively. I understand that the Child Center in Santa Cruz is being closed for lack of budget. Certainly that money could have helped that center stay open if in fact it is being closed. That's just a minor example that I'm aware of. But again, I believe that the merchants have a right to ask street musicians or anyone else to move from the front of their store. What I've experienced down here in the last couple years playing music, though, is that there are some people on the street. They're not necessarily homeless people from Santa Cruz. They're visitors mainly that come in and out of town that do cause trouble for the merchants. One day I was sitting in this very spot playing my guitar, and a guy on drugs came up to me and started harassing me. Then he proceeded to go into the store adjacent from me and beg money from the customers. That kind of behavior to me is behavior that should not be accommodated or is unacceptable. And it is bad for the community, it's bad for the merchants, and it's bad for the street musicians too.
Well, of course, now, from my legalistic point of view, my response would be that, you know, a merchant in her or his store has certainly a greater prerogative and control and responsibility to, you know, for the comfort of his customers. That's one area. Another area, however, is on the sidewalk. And I would ask, if a merchant wants to come out and ask a musician to move, certainly, I mean, it's anybody's right to ask a musician to move on, but the sidewalks are public places. Now, what was worked out 23 years ago, 25 years ago, actually, with Tom Noddy and other musicians in the Voluntary Street Performers Guidelines was kind of an informal agreement that if a merchant really was having trouble with somebody out there, they could come out and say, look, can you play for an hour and move along? And the person, provided it was done with respectfully, the person, you know, might well understand that that's kind of the policy in Santa Cruz, informally, not legally, because they have a right to be there. If they want to stay on the sidewalk and keep doing what they're doing, they have the right to do it, provided they're not engaging in disturbing the peace, blocking the sidewalk. In other words, laws that actually have some substantial, real function. I'm not talking about the bogus downtown ordinances that say you can't be 14 feet from a building on a seat or 10 feet from a building with a guitar. 14 feet from a building on the sidewalk. You can sit on a bench, of course, wherever the benches are.
You can't ask.
You cannot sit on a bench and play your guitar and solicit money. In other words, you cannot have an open guitar case while you play on a bench, which is a ridiculous part of the law.
That's bullshit law about conduct on public property, which again is...
Your point about musicians performing being a facet of free speech is very well taken. However, I would say that if a musician's performing down here and a merchant asks them to move away from the entrance of their store, that is a problem for the musician, probably the musician shouldn't really be performing down here anyway.
It would depend, of course, on the circumstance. I mean, the idea that a merchant... In some circumstances, that, you know, depending on...
There are very few merchants on Pacific Avenue that I've experienced in the last couple of years that mind if a musician performs in front of their store.
Well, the Heinrichs, for example, are two that do. And the Pacific Trading Company, or at least that's been the substance of numerous complaints that they logged into the city. They called the police 22 times in the course of 2 or 3 months. Not all of them for musicians, but some of them.
Robert, I don't know what your issues are with the Pacific Trading Company.
Give them as an example.
The owners of the Pacific Trading Company on two different occasions have asked me to move from the front of their store. I have no problem with them. They've been very nice to me and very respectful to me. I don't know much about their business or their relationship to the city, the community, but what I do know, based on talking to a representative of their store, that they are very actively involved in the community and have contributed extensively to different projects in this community that are beneficial not just to the city itself, but to the homeless people as well.
Okay.
And I think that's the other side of the story that needs to be acknowledged.
Okay, well, do you know what those projects are? Because
that's something that if they wanted that information to be shared with the community, I'm sure they would have already made that information available.
You have more confidence in their generosity than I do. They may well be that way, but I would like to see some evidence of it, particularly since, you know, as you and I both have noted, they have moved, well, the city has moved that railing after extensive pressure and consultations with the Pacific Trading Company without any public process.
Robert, it'll be interesting to hear how you edit this tape.
I'm not going to edit it.
Okay, that's a very good thing. I appreciate you recognizing my right to free speech. I don't know what your issues are with that particular company. My instincts tell me that you're singling someone out. You're singling out an entity, an organization or a business, when the real issues down here, again, in regards to freedom of speech, in regards to street musicians, have more to do with the city council than one individual business down here, and also has more to do with the powers that be that exist within the city of Santa Cruz, above and beyond the city council.
I think you're right.
So personally, I think you're being really unfair in targeting them. But then again, I don't know what your personal issues are with that particular store.
I have no personal issues with the Heinrichs, really. I mean, actually, you know, we're fairly amiable when we talk to each other, until they read my flyers and they start ranting that I'm a liar and so forth, or saying that I'm a liar. Ranting is perhaps an unfair way of characterizing, or, well, you know, it's not totally unfair, but they have their strong opinions, as do I.
Whether I agree with you or not, I fully support your right to exercise free speech. Personally, I don't know what the problem is with you having a table down here and using that as a vehicle to do so. That's really all that I could say about it. I don't necessarily have to agree with you or anyone else, but I'm always going to defend a person's right to express how they feel, as long as they do it in a nonviolent way, and as long as they do it in a way that's not slanderous or hurtful to other businesses or other individuals.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, of course, on the other hand, candidly speaking, a boycott of the Pacific Trading Company and Candy Jackson Shoes is designed to hurt their business. It is designed to get them and customers to consider that the downtown ordinances were mainly passed by Jackson's Shoes petition that last summer, in the summer of 2002, and the railing of that fence was largely the function of pressure from the Pacific Trading Company.
What I would ask is, instead of pointing fingers at individual businesses, why don't you address the issue of how the ordinance were written and why they were written the way that they were, and improving on that part of the situation? In other words, when the whoever started the momentum to have a new ordinance written down here, personally, I believe they had every right to do so. When I was down here 2 years ago, the street was a mess down here. That wasn't just my opinion. I had people, elderly people, I had kids, I had women tell me the same thing, and they all said, we won't go downtown anymore. We don't like walking on Pacific Avenue because of the people that are down there and the problems that they cause. So personally, I think there was a need for a change down here. It's just that the change that was made was very unfair to some of the people that weren't causing any trouble in this city or in the downtown area. What the political motivation for that is, I can't say. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, your point is also well taken, that you aren't the only one who said, you know, why pick on two businesses when it was numerous businesses and other groups, too, that pressured city council to pass the downtown ordinances. And although, you know, perhaps the railing may largely have been motivated by the Pacific Trading Company, it was also, to some extent, at least for a period of time, Costa Brava and also Rosie McCann's, although the managers of those businesses apparently recanted and decided that their employees were going to be punished too, because they wouldn't have a place to sit down during their breaks and come out and so forth. And that's and interestingly enough, in the old Santa Cruz, people used to come out of the businesses and sit on the red brick planters that were out here, but the police department and the city decided that they wanted to eliminate those red brick planters and give us this sparse collection of half the benches that were planned originally in the post-earthquake Vision Santa Cruz plan. The reason that, and I have gone to the city council and I have given them elaborate analyses, as have other groups. In fact, most people who spoke openly to the city council said, your ordinances do not address vandalism, they do not address graffiti, they do not address sexual harassment, they do not address violence, they do not even really address disrespect. All they do is they give the police a much greater enforcement option, and they criminalize sitting on 95% of the sidewalk. They criminalize an unattended backpack. They criminalize playing music with a display device within 10 feet of all kinds of things, including a building, a bench. And of course, and they continue to criminalize what you pointed out, being seated on public property and, let's say, performing or even public speaking.
One thing that I would add to that is that in the 2 years that I've been performing music on the street, I have not talked to one person that approves of the ordinance. that as it was written. Many people approve of the spirit behind the ordinance, but the actual way that the ordinance was written, to everyone I've talked to, and this is not a biased opinion, I'm just stating the fact, thinks that the ordinance is ridiculous as it relates to street musicians. The other issues that you brought up about backpacks and people sitting on the sidewalk, the reality is that some of the people that hang out down on the street or hung out on the street in the past didn't use common sense and could care about anybody but themselves. So they left their backpacks in a place that was in the way. They sat on the street in ways to obstruct people's progress down the street. So that part of the law I agree with. I think that people come into a downtown area should be able to walk up and down the sidewalk freely without being disrupted by anyone for any reason.
Well, there were already laws that prohibited disrupting people walking on the sidewalk. I mean, you don't need new ordinances that make it illegal to sit on 95% of the sidewalk to make it illegal to disrupt a person walking on the sidewalk, because that law currently exists. In fact, I was arrested under that law illegally by Butchie Baker at the very table, you may remember, where you defended me, I guess, 3 or 4 days after my arrest. That was when the table was smashed. But the point is that there's a different agenda that is going on than the simple concern about a belief that the main purpose of the downtown is for commercial purposes and not for community purposes. And it's not a shared downtown, that we are here on the sufferance of the merchants. And I don't believe that.
Robert, I absolutely disagree with you. That goes counter to what makes a business function. In other words, the merchants down here can't function without people coming downtown. The merchants down here can't function without there being traffic on the street. And people are that traffic. So I couldn't disagree with you more.
What is it you disagree with? I'm sorry.
What I'm saying is that you're saying that there's a culture created down here, or I understand you to say there's a culture created down here to inhibit people from coming downtown.
Not people. They want tourists who are spending money. They don't want people with guitar cases. They don't want hippies and young people without any money. They certainly don't want homeless people. They're all bunches and kinds of people. Cynthia Matthews, in the private conversations earlier this week, not really private, they were actually public, she's a council member, wanted to find ways to make sure that GA was cut so that people would not be, quote, encouraged to come to Santa Cruz as the most comfortable place. That was what she told county officials in a meeting with Emily Riley at the city manager's office on Monday.
And you've been listening to a rather lengthy discussion between myself and Jeff, the guitarist, downtown. You can sometimes hear Jeff, or see Jeff anyway, with his guitar down near the Cooper House area. I've heard him play, and I like it what he does. He's a sweet singer. And he also has some different points of view. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM you're listening to. Let's listen to a little music, and then we'll move into another area. If you want to call in, have any comments, anything you've heard, you can do that, 427-3772, or email me at rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail.com. Campfire and sing the whole night long. that, of course, was the notorious Jess Kidden, Kidden on the Square with Mayor's Lawn. So, again, 427-3772 is the call-in number to call. And we're going to be a bit late with the Nick Whitehead Homeless in Outer Space segment. I've been getting some complaints about too much of me and Jeff. And so here's a bit from, maybe you'll get some more complaints about this one. Here's the City Council budget, some selections from, well, the budget debate. And actually what you've got here first is Nora Hockman, member of the community, labor activist, someone who detests me with a passion, but who often has a lot of good things to say. And she's talking about the budget hearing, where, as I said before, everybody gets to talk for 3 minutes on 24 items, all in one bunch. And the City Council then gets to take up the rest of the time. We're going to hear that, and then after that, we're going to hear Mike Rotkin's response to all of this. We're going to hear some oral communication, not really oral communication, public comment about the budget. And this was last Tuesday, July 22nd. And thank you, Becky Johnson, for putting together this videotape, without which we would not be able to hear this.
I'm Nora Hockman. Hi, Santa Cruz Action Network. But before the clock starts, I have a question, a procedural question. Is it a single point of testimony that no further comments following overall comments can be made on each individual item? Is
yes.
that what you're saying? And so how will questions get answered that are posed in the course of testimony by the public?
If councilmembers
on specific items.
If you when members of the public ask questions during this time you're speaking right now, mm-hmm. then when the public comment is finished, council members will ask staff to respond.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
We're not. If it depends, you know.
Okay.
It's Mike Rotkin saying we're not.
On item 33B, the Santa Cruz Action Network has consistently requested that there be a 7% cut to the Conference and Visitors Center budget and wishes to further note the 10% cut to social service funding, which is truly sad, and thinks that it is most appropriate that at the very least this council come close to that with a 7% cut to the CVC. You know, item C is, you know, the acceptance for the expenditure of funds to social services with the 10% cut, and that's truly too bad. Item 33F, which is resource recovery for the recycling facility. This is the Skills Center contract renewal. SCAN is asking that the city consider consolidation of these efforts with the County of Santa Cruz recycling efforts and stop contracting out the work that either could be, should be, used to be, or might be done by union members, even if in another jurisdiction. Item 33G, which is the Safe Routes to School grant, water and street sidewalks. I'd like to know if the $281,700 that's identified as from a state grant are TDA funds. If they are not TDA funds, then the irony of having eliminated $90,000 worth of school crossing guards and yet having an item that talks about safe routes to schools, if it's possible for the use of that $281,000 to cover school crossing guards, that might be a nice thing for our kids on the streets. On item 33N, which is the Memorandum of Understanding to fund a cooperative retail management business real property improvement district community officer, SCAN would like to know if that's a new position being authorized to work within the police department with redevelopment agency.
I'm sorry, Nora, what
sorry.
Letter was that?
That's item 33N.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm just, you know, kind of going in the order of my notes, but on the revenue side of the House, SCAN is asking that we begin very seriously exploring new sources of revenue, and we suggest two for your consideration, and we'll be coming back to you to talk about them in more specifics. One is the possibility of imposing fees on cafe extensions. Since they're rapidly taking over private sidewalks, we think that the public ought to benefit in some way, that there ought to be a community benefit to that. And the second is consideration of an increase in the admission tax and reinstatement of the admission tax on the arcades.
Your time is up.
Could I just finish a couple?
Sure.
Thanks.
Just go through the list.
Thank you. Item 33S, which is the city attorney contract. Again, it's nothing personal. I like the guy very much, but SCAN is calling for a 7% reduction to the function of this contract representing a $28,000 savings, which if added to the $23,000 savings of the 7% reduction to the CVC would begin to add up, and if that were added to an additional 7% contribution from your reserves, we could start to see almost three quarters of $1 million put together along with a 7% reduction to executive management salaries. So item 33 is the entire budget, is that correct? So item 34 has nothing to do with the budget?
Right.
Is that correct?
Something else.
Separate action.
Yes.
Separate
action.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Paul, let me just say, just so there's not misinformation, 34 does have to do with a fee that we're talking about raising that would actually have a long-term impact on the budget, just so there's not anybody misled.
But it's another agenda item that we'll have separate discussion.
Yeah. We're having it's an item for separate action. Mr. Gosley?
Yes, Bob Gosley, Santa Cruz Action Network. Also math instructor for 23 years. Looking at the budget, you almost need to be a math instructor, it looks like sometimes. I would like to recognize the difficulty of making the budget cuts. I know it's a hard and not fun job, and I hope you take my comments seriously.
And you're listening to Bob Gosley. Bob is also on the Downtown Commission, on the SCAN Steering Committee, and just briefly, Nora Hochman's questions, according to Becky Johnson, who was listening to the budget hearing, were never answered. She never heard them answered anyway. So, so much for government response to public input.
I'm not sure. I would also like to thank those council members who have been receptive to some suggestions by the public in the past in the budget hearings. I would like to clear up some rebuttals that were made to in the budget hearings, though, earlier to phantom arguments that were made. It was said that we were stating that high management salaries were the problem, and we weren't stating that they were the problem. We were saying that in tough times, it's a reasonable assumption to ask people to cut salaries that are making on the high end of things. We recommended a 7% cut to management salaries to save $122,000. We were met with the rebuttal that these are good people in these positions, they shouldn't be cut. We didn't say they weren't good people in those positions. We once again believe that if you're making six figures in tough times, that this is where some cuts should come from, that these it's not unreasonable to ask people that are making six figures to cut back on those salaries. Regarding the CVC, constant reference was made to a 2001 study which supposedly says that for every $1 invested, 9 tax dollars come back to the city. Therefore, that was one of the basis for a minimal cut to the CVC. Well, as a math teacher, this is the kind of statistical sleight of hand that's really a ready-made lesson for math teachers in the classroom to explore. If this is true, I submit that our budget woes are over because we just got a great amount of money that can be invested at a 900% return. So I suggest we take council salaries or retirement from management or even sell bonds to the city, city bonds, guarantee the bond investors 20% interest. The city will still get 780% back on their investment. 100,000 becomes 780,000, presto changeo, and the budget woes are over. Now, if you really believe this, this isn't a ridiculous argument. So is this just voodoo economics, Santa Cruz style? One last question. I just saw up here where $1 million was lost on hotel tax revenues from the past year. If this investment is bringing back a 9-to-1 return on this ratio, how is this possible?
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, I'm Nancy Grayson. I've lived here a long time and raised my children here. And one of the things I always did was take them over to Harvey West Pool. And I don't know if you've been there recently. I've only been back there for 2 months doing water aerobics. And I have been amazed at the usage. And I was saddened when I heard that this might be closed. I've spoken to many people over there.
And later in the budget hearing, here is Rotkin's response to the SCAN steering committee concerns.
Mark and then Ed. Mike?
I agree with the mayor's first point, so I won't repeat it. Secondly, the issue of what the CVC generates is not just in the transient occupancy tax. It's also in sales taxes and other kinds of ways that people spend money in our community that result in us getting return. And my argument is that, and it may be wrong, but it's what I believe looking at the numbers I see, is that when people come to our community, our county, because they got the kind of people that the CVC draws, who are people that contact them on the web or in other ways and ask them, you know, can I bring a convention or a conference? We're not big enough for conventions, but a conference here. Can I bring my family to stay for a week? And I, you know, the kinds of things that's what they're getting calls about. They're not asking, you know, which way to the boardwalk. Those people, when they go shopping, tend to go to Pacific Avenue before they go to... I would challenge anybody to tell me where you think they're going out in the county for a shopping experience when they get here and spend a couple days overnight, or where they're going. It's not that there are no restaurants or no shopping areas in the county. There are some, but I'm sure we get a disproportionate share of the sales tax. So you need to count that in as well. And I do want to respond to the argument that was, by being a simple math lesson with an economics lesson, which is when you do a study that determines what kind of return you get for an investment, what would be wrong, a misuse of that study would be to say, gee, well, we know exactly what would happen if we cut that expenditure in half or if we doubled that expenditure. And nobody has predicted that if you double the amount of money you gave to the CVC, that you would get 9 times payback for double the expenditure. We only know from an actual empirical, now 2 empirical studies, that the amount of money we spend on them has brought us back as a practical fact, not a speculation, 9 times the amount of money that we invested in that organization. I think you'd be totally speculative and making a big mistake if you thought if you gave them 15% more that you'd get an increase of 9 times that, or doubled their money you'd get 9 times that. So no one's making that claim. I mean, otherwise it would be so obvious that we should just spend all of our money and invest it all in the CVC and have our budget problems be over. But nobody's made that claim. All we're claiming is, based on requests from council members twice now in the past, we've said, show us what we get back for this money. And they went out and actually interviewed the people who contacted them and asked and tracked them down to find out, well, where did they spend their money, what did they do here, and what happened. And the result of that was a clear indication empirically, as a matter of fact, that those people were spending 9 times more money than we were contributing to the CVC. Now, I don't, in fact, believe that there's a, if we cut them, I wouldn't want to make the argument that we'll lose everything, that everybody, if we cut them in half, that we would lose half the business that they attract. Probably not. And I certainly don't want to make the argument that if we double them, we'll get twice as much, you know, of a payback back. But I think the level we're funding them at now, and I don't care what the county does. I want the county not to be irresponsible and ride on our coattails. I also wish every city were as equally responsible, and they're not always. But I don't think the way you get there is by, well, they're not paying their fair amount, so we're going to cut ours. We'd be cutting off our nose to spite our face, because I do believe this is an investment, and I think that the mayor's point was correct about this. So I'm not in favor of the cuts, and let me be really clear. We don't need to each of us apologize before we make a negative thing. I don't for a moment think that this is a personal thing with Tim or the rest of us. We're making hard decisions up here. I believe everybody's in good faith when they say, I want to cut this because I think it's a rational thing to do. We just disagree about how much this really is an investment and whether it has the return that I'm claiming. I don't think that Tim's doing this out of any mean-spiritedness or that he hates the people that are involved in the tourist industry or anything else. We just disagree about what the fiscal impact will be for the city if we make the decision that he's proposing. And I don't agree with him, and I'm not going to support it. But I don't plan to apologize every time I cut something to explain that I love everybody who I'm cutting. Everybody up here feels deeply about virtually everything that we're funding currently, and we still have to make hard decisions and cut things. And it's not personal for any of us, and I don't believe it for a moment, and I don't want anybody to feel defensive about that.
Thank you, Mike. Mark?
Yeah, I don't want to
Yeah, just don't cut the CVC budget. Thank you very much. That's the bottom line of Mike Rodkin's statement. And, of course, he never explains clearly how the voodoo economics of the CVC study actually persuasively shows that $1 produces $9 and that there has been any meaningful result other than, you know, kicking down $400,000 to the Seaside Company so it can advertise more for the boardwalk. That's been, of course, the big deal that was raised by Crone and Sugar in their brief stay in office, to their credit, and it never really went anywhere, unfortunately. I think they were able to suspend a small portion of that for a while. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're listening to some budget hearing clips, compliments of Becky Johnson. In the studio, however, with us now is that much-beloved playwright and community television worker, Nutcracker Nick Whitehead. Hi, Nick.
How about turning on my mic? How about when you're going to turn on my mic?
Your
I'm
mic
waiting
is
for
on.
You to turn on
your
my mic.
Mic is on. You're going to be out.
I want to be heard. I got a vast public out there. Yeah, they're all waiting to hear my revelation.
Well, lead the herd. So what you got coming up, Homeless in Space Part 2.
I took that $50 for you to, and I promised to keep quiet, but I want my mic turned on.
Mm-hmm. Well, your mic is on. So.
Oh, sorry.
So why don't you go ahead and give us the intro, and then we'll roll into Homeless in Space Part 2. Sum up for those of us who didn't hear the last week's episode, so to speak. It's actually, of course, one complete drama or one complete satire. But
this is a historical perspective on certain people who may possibly currently be occupying seats in our very own city. Their names may be different, but the lies and the extolations are the same. Mm. So, I think what happened in the show last time was that this very verbose professor from up on the hill, he came and won re-election from his re-election. You know,
Professor Plotkin.
The endlessly recycled Professor Plotkin got another seat, and then he was thinking maybe he ought to make a profit out of the deal. Maybe he shouldn't be such an idealist and such a leftist. So he'd go more center with the bookstore owner, Neil Kundogle. And
no relation to Neil Coonerty of the bookshop Santa Cruz, I'm sure.
But then the mild-mannered Stark Kent from the newspaper, The Failing Planet.
No relation to Dan White of the Urinal, I mean of the Sentinel?
I guess not. Put on his super bum costume, and him and the boy wonder, Bobbin, disrupted a council meeting because they couldn't stand all the blather. Does this sound familiar?
Actually, that sounds like not a newspaperman. It sounds like one of your local activist types.
Yeah.
There's
a few of them left staggering around, I guess. Mm-hmm. So then what happens is, bringing it right up to date here, the two heroes disrupted the council meeting, and then they got... the perennial problem was not resolved. The perennial problem being what to do about the homeless survivors on the street. And so now we're going to be talking about that. We're going into the city council room of Professor Plotkin.
All right, let's check it out.
If you will, our new councilman from UCSC, supposedly reintegrated, feeling decidedly disintegrated.
I've got to distract myself from these daily cares and woes, shake off these excesses of stresses. When I was a bearded young student of Marxism, all I had to do was light up a doobie and fill the room with dense green smoke. But now I'm a bearded old professor, and my council office is right next to Police Chief Bellhop, a trained pot sniffer if ever I smelled one. Those FBI kids go straight from toilet training to pot sniffing. Oh, well, that's the price I pay for joining the establishment. Guess the only safe thing to do to relieve stress is what I did at 16. Put a hand in my pocket and pull out the whole caboodle. They can't get me for reading Mad Magazine, can they? Oracle of the Red Planet. Face on Mars speaks. In a rare interview with the New York Crimes, the mysterious giant face on planet Mars claims that Einstein's famous formula, E equals MC squared, is a fake. The real formula is E equals Big Mac squared. There's got to be, wait a minute. Eureka, yes, there is! a workable solution to the homeless dilemma. Our city manager has got to hear this.
Sorry, I'm on my way to the crematorium.
The crematorium? Did somebody die?
Yes, our paper shredder. Now we have to burn all the secret documents, turn them to crispy brown before the Brown Act falls on us.
But wait, I've had a brilliant idea.
Sorry, I don't have 2 days just to twiddle my thumbs, not to mention 2 ears for him to wear out.
You can't go. I need a witness to the birth of this brilliant conception, a synthesis of Mendeleev and Machiavelli.
Now you have my attention. All city managers are interested in Machiavelli. It's required reading, you know, ever since The Great Communicator. You remember the one and only once-in-a-lifetime rambling Ronnie Reagan.
Oh, forget Reagan. I, Professor Slotkin, Plotkin, and Grotkin, I and only I am this county's great fumigator.
Fumigator?
Yes, it's so simple, so socialistically simple. I'm going to eradicate the pest problem by fumigating them away into outer space.
What? Blow the homeless away with a giant leaf blower? Yes! Bring me my motorized backpack.
Harmless fun, but my approach is more intellectual.
My cue to leave?
Their cue to leave. The dopers, the won't-works, the sit-abouts, the pavement proletariat.
The 30% malt liquor suction machines. Backpackers. Skateboarders.
Two-timing child support avoiders. One-legged war veterans who leave their good leg at home.
ATM machine attackers.
Parking lot paupers. Ragtime beggars in rags. They're all out of here. All of them. Out, out!
Fine. Just fine. Where are they gonna go?
The Red Planet, that's where. My original plan to banish these wanderers and misfits to eternal campouts in the state parks, that plan was brilliantly conceived, of course. But slimy Pete Pilsen from Sacramento couldn't keep his hands off it. But this is great. A truly magnificent conceptualization of a conceptual form of concept.
Academics.
And not at all academic, no. Down to Earth for all it's worth.
Mars is down to Earth?
Sure, no problem. Send a man to Mars. I mean, send a bench sitter to Mars. You'll never see them again. Even Sacramento can't bring them back.
That does have some appeal.
Mars is sitting out there, totally useless, not serving a single living orgasm. Now it can be colonized. A big red home for big red beer drinkers.
Yes, perhaps you do have something. Mars, a giant interplanetary waste incinerator. No NIMBYs to object. Mars is in nobody's backyard. As far as we know, Mars is ideal. It doesn't even have an atmosphere. Those homeless bonzos and bimbos can sit on all the wooden benches they can find out there and drink from all the brown paper bags they can find. With no atmosphere, they can fry all day long and freeze all night.
Yes, definitely a humane and decent answer, acceptable to any thinking UC undergraduate.
So, you actually found one this semester?
That original homeless campground on Coral Street was just too densely populated.
Very densely populated.
Even their dogs will be happier out there. It's a natural sanctuary. Why, there's no germs or bacteria on Mars.
And all that red dust will kill off their fleas and ticks. They could even turn some of their hippie dogs into lunar rovers.
We can't let the environmentalists hear about this. They'll want to know what happens to all the dog droppings.
Don't worry. The space agency will write out a contract for $1 million poop scoop.
Hello? Hello? Is that NASA? NASA, NASA? The National Space Administration. Hello? Hello? Is that NASA? What do you mean, echo? I don't hear any echo. All I hear is the sound of my own voice, the familiar sound of my own confident voice, the most resounding sound of my own very convincing, deliberately soft-pitched, marvelous voice.
Who you got on the line, Mike?
A big fish called NASA.
What, the space geeks?
Nobody speaks for the unknown geeks, particularly space-flying geeks, but these geeks could be useful. Hello? Mission Control? Houston?
Mission Control?
Council Commander Plotkin here, speaking from my office in Pretty Hall in the town of Slanty Cruz, home of the spacewalk.
Boardwalk, Mike.
Cakewalk, I mean. Well, Space Commander Golden Boy, so you yourself actually paid good federal money and rode our Big Dipper.
Giant Dipper, Mike.
Day tripper, hair clipper, who cares? This is great publicity for socialized medicine.
The head of NASA rode on the Giant Dipper, and that gives us socialized medicine?
The boardwalk, dear, the boardwalk. Everything connects, given the right social environment. Alexander Hamilton would have made the ideal student for Frederick Engels, given the...
Give me no more. Is this what you feed your victims on a hill?
I lay it all bare. The Chinese emperor has no clothes. Capitalism is completely threadbare of original ideas. Original sin can be compared to a bare tread on a motorbike tire. I can retire, but I won't fall off my bike when I roar up the mountain. Jesse Helms can take a hike.
Mike, have you taken leave of your sentences? I mean, your senses?
No, I always keep them in a safety pouch. Now, back to action. Yes, Commander Golden Boy, the Giant Dipper is still here, and so are the Dodgem cars, in case your astronauts need them. Yes, I understand. Those flashing lights could confuse them, remind them of UFOs and space gremlins. Certainly, calm because of the crack up in the Soviet space station, yes? The one that is merely falling apart. While I normally been very impressed with the outstanding achievements of socialized medicine, it would be redundant of me in this particular instance not to... Hello? Hello? Operator, can you reconnect me?
After saturating him with that sea of words, are you surprised the head of the space agency dissed you?
Apparently to him, I'm merely a passing encounter.
A not-so-close encounter of the 43rd kind?
Thanks, 43, 32, 43.
What's on your mind?
32, 43, I need some new underwear for Christmas. Long johns for my first spacewalk.
Hello there, Councilman. Is there anybody in?
We're all in it together. It's a great dichotomy. Once the left penetrates the right, then the right can only...
Please, I need an Alka-Seltzer.
Time is running out. Oh, hello, Chief Earthling Grotkin here. What I propose is that it be turned into an overnight shelter for spaced-out street people. Oh, yes, we have a ready supply. Yes, they're fully ready for their first mission, and many have been spaced out for years. Master plan, the gem of the left coast? Yes, I can stop talking. I think I can, if you really prefer that. There. I stopped. I think I stopped. I'm listening.
We've been following the puppets and been blowing them away. Don't you know Pinocchio's not going on today? Tell them around us, we are leaving here for good. We would only stay here if our heads were made of wood. Following the puppets, I ain't following the puppets. We ain't following the puppets anymore.
Thank you all for coming out in your lunch hour, or should I call it launch hour. Today, I'm happy to say, thanks to the socialized space medicine program of Chief Earthling Slotkin, we can write a bright new chapter in Slanty Crew's his story.
Her story! Her story!
Oh, Hershey boy, Hershey boy!
Thank you, I do agree.
Start the motors!
As I was saying, today the much-abused downtown shoppers can breathe a sigh of relief. No more pushy panhandler rage. No more ragged hippie rage. No more consumer contempt.
Push on button.
For today, those who pushed our buttons must now sit back, helpless, powerless, as we turn the tables and push one big button for mankind. A button that will send them into space where there are no sidewalks to clutter and no clutter to sit on the spacewalks.
Push a launch button.
One brave store owner daily braved the hordes of wanton, woebegone, down-at-heel counter-consumer radicals moms and their detestable nourishment providers. Food, not moms.
Food, not moms.
Food for bums.
We are launching our lost ones into a fresh dimension full of vapid new possibilities for a glorious new age existence in some distant paradise. I wish them bon voyage, bon ami, and bongo bongo.
Push the launch button.
There we go. James Roberts.
Hooray!
And so a large silver tube full of unwanted street people roars through the sky. The borrowed rocket from NASA is on its way to the forbidding planet of Mars. Let's look in on the unfortunate...
And that look-in will have to be perhaps next week. You've been listening to part two of Homeless in Space. Nick, any comments?
This perennial situation of what have been called street nerds, or these are other people's words, of course, trolls, and currently panhandlers and jewelry makers on the street and jugglers. It seems like a perennial problem in American society. I wonder if it's true in African societies or down in Mexico. We don't often hear from people who've survived on the street in those countries, but when I was in South Africa, I always found there was a home for people, black people, who were traveling without means, without money, without addresses of people to look up. There was a natural camaraderie and a clan responsibility. My mom was telling me about that just the other day, how they took some African friends into a different country. They took them out of South Africa over the mountains into Lesotho, which is Basuto land to other people, where the people ride around on ponies. And these couple of South African blacks with my mom and her English friend said, where are we going to stay tonight? They still had a little apartheid there. They couldn't stay in the hotel where my mom was staying. And so they hadn't planned the trip very well. But the two blacks said, well, we'll just go down to the local neighborhood and we'll just ask around. And yeah, you know, they went in a little shebeen and had a couple of drinks with people, and they got themselves fixed up for the night. Right, that within 2 hours of arriving in a foreign country, they were able to just make personal arrangements with people of the same bloodline.
Yeah, it sounds like the experience I had in Nicaragua in 1987. Very, very companionable. Open their hearts, open their homes. Poor people are often that way, more so than, you know, those of us who have more money, who are, I guess, afraid we have more to lose and that sort of thing. So have you been back to South Africa, Nick, since...
No, my mother has been back there to see my brother, Jan, who lives in Johannesburg, and he lives behind... She was rather shocked to find that he lives behind a double barricaded wall. He has his Jag and his Beamer. I have a bicycle in Santa Cruz, and I don't have even a fence around our property. So there's a total difference in living style between my brother and I.
I was just kind of wondering whether is it illegal to fall asleep on the streets of Johannesburg as it is in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night?
Well, it may be illegal, but the actual treatment would be different. The police would probably remove them to the black area of town.
Well, wait a minute. I thought apartheid was gone.
Well, that's true. There are mixed places, like Hillbrow is a very famous mixed area. That's where my girlfriend used to stay when I was working in Johannesburg. But they would take them to an area where there were enough blacks that they would probably be taken in. I think that would be the police solution. Unless they were under the influence of drugs or alcohol, that might be a different story.
But under the influence of exhaustion and the need to sleep, as 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people are in Santa Cruz every night for only 39 of them in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, they would not be, arrested, ticketed, or threatened?
Not as severely as here, because it's kind of part of a way of life of the poverty that exists throughout Africa. So there's a little more tolerance to that sort of thing.
So in other words, in Santa Cruz, you're not going to tolerate visible poverty, but in Africa, it's kind of a part of the
scene. Yeah, the image is really important in small towns like Carmel, Capitola, and Santa Cruz.
Well, you've been around for I don't know how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've been here 33 years, I think.
And you were here when before the mall, the earthquake, before the mall was redone,
yeah,
with all the,
uh-huh,
essentially most of the seating space was removed. It used to be in the red brick planters. And you actually helped form we formed an organization together way back in 1989 or thereabouts.
Stop Police Abuse Now.
Yeah, and you actually, it still has
I did a report on that, which was submitted to the Board of Supervisors and to the city officials, and it was read with respect. I got a little feedback on that.
How are the police treating people these days? Any reports coming in still, or any sense of your own personal observation? I know you work at community TV when you're not doing these satirical diatribes.
No, I'm not taking accounts of actual police abuses right now, so I couldn't tell you about that. But I just would observe that there seem to be many more police on the mall than there were in those days, which were about 12 years ago. There's definitely more police presence on the mall. Of course, there are more people overall on the mall, and I think that's why they've just stepped up. I don't know if this police presence is a reassurance to visitors and residents, or whether it's conceived of as the center of town, therefore you must have police. But they're definitely a control factor towards the lower income groups.
Yeah. Afraid so. There's actually a meeting tomorrow of the Bill of Rights, the Committee to Preserve or Reserve or Conserve the Bill of Rights, the one that's opposing the Patriot Act and asking the City Council, so far without impact, to require city officials not to cooperate with the national so-called Patriot Act, the law that makes your library reading open information for the FBI,
yeah,
and the various intelligence agencies.
Well, let's just quickly run down what people lose under this Patriot Act. They lose the right to have their families informed if they're arrested. Whew. I mean, that is an international right that you would expect to have. They also lose the right to have automatic access to a lawyer, because it's a national security sort of court that issues warrants for arrests. And they can also have their computers delved into and their phones tapped. You lose a lot of rights with this Patriot Act.
Now, how many people has this been applied to, or do we not? I guess, do we have those figures?
No, I don't have any figures on that.
I'm wondering if they're available or whether they're simply secret. Perhaps someone out there might know. But in any case, the Santa Cruz City Council, though it initially came out against the Patriot Act, has declined so far to take the steps that would put it more strongly on record against the act, and instructing its personnel not to cooperate, although I guess the library, whether independently or because of direction, has decided not to cooperate, I believe.
We need, at this time, all political elected officials to be much stronger, because it started with marijuana and the feds going against the wishes of the voting public of California on the medical marijuana issue, the persecution of medical marijuana growers and even users. That was a sign that the feds are going to get rough. They've also been very rough in this state towards people in the alternative vitamin pill field. They've raided people who maybe been making medical claims for their vitamin and herb products. So I know that's some time ago, but that's where the feds really started oppressing Californians.
Well, the meeting of the Bill of Rights Committee,
yeah,
is tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the second floor of the main library downtown. It's open to the public. It starts again at 6 p.m., so come on down if you're interested. John Gibson is the man to call. You can give him a call at 419-3190, 419-3190. He's been one of the guiding spirits there. They did get Council Member and Vice Mayor Scott Kennedy to come to the meeting last time. He folded his arms and said, gave them various suggestions and said that, I think he said he personally favored what they were doing. I may be misquoting him here, but I got the impression he personally favored it, but that he wasn't going to put anything on the agenda for the upcoming, because of the upcoming budget concerns. And, of course, the council's gone on recess during the next month, so there won't be anything until the second week in September. And he also suggested they run around and get more signatures and also get endorsements from different organizations. Sure, that's a good idea. The real question is, do we want to have another 6 weeks worth of frankly, every day under the Patriot Act, every day with city officials colluding and cooperating with this particular bill is a bad day. I mean, I am concerned, of course, about the local Patriot Act and the fact that also happening on Monday we have this meeting of the Bill of Rights Committee, 6 o'clock at the library. But on Tuesday at 8:15 in the morning, Steve Argue will be going to arraignment for a misdemeanor failure to move a table after 61 minutes on the sidewalk. He was arrested for that at the Pacific Trading Company twice, right, I say at the sidewalk in front of the Pacific Trading Company. And then there is a second arraignment the next day, Wednesday, 8:15, of Matthew Hartog, who was not only arrested, he was dragged off and stuffed into a police car.
That was a pretty disgusting scene. I saw that on the video you brought into the TV.
Yeah.
Very painful experience. They tried to drag him along the street. He was a very large, heavy man. And they really had about four police officers trying to drag him into the police car, and they they were not very successful. It seemed to take them about 5 minutes to drag him inside the police car.
Yeah, and that actually, I guess, will be airing on community TV at some point. We had him on in the studio. Becky Johnson did a program on that for her club cruise.
Doesn't he have some medical problems, too? They were taking
cancer.
A risk with
his
health.
He has cancer, and he has lymphoma, according to his report. And that definitely is a real medical problem. I think they took him to Dominican as well. I mean, I don't want to give the police short shrift in terms of what they did. I want to be accurate about what they did. But the huge number of officers, including the lieutenant and the sergeant, maybe even two sergeants, but certainly one, the day before, well, I should say 2 weeks before when they gave the first arrest for Steve Argue, there were seven squad cars, eight police officers within an hour after his arrest when they came to stop me from tabling for more than an hour in front of the Pacific Trading Company. Now, of course, police have now been adopting a low profile, and they haven't been going after tables, but the law is sitting on the books, and the police use it whenever they want. Now they use it selectively, and I guess we all should be very grateful, but frankly, I'm not. I want to see that law gone, and hopefully at 11 o'clock, I should say at 12 o'clock, in about 40 minutes, we're going to be talking with Joe Williams, who has tried to raise that issue at City Council and has not been successful. Let's listen to a little music and continue with Bathrop's Pierce Broadsides at 96.3 FM.